Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had cheap.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be alright.
Okay. So Ireland won, New Zealand won. It's 11 PM. I'm David Snead. This is the Football Family. I'm joined by Gavin Cooney. Stephen Kenny has just finished his post-match press conference where he said it's his instinct that he will not be offered a new contract. The writing was on the wall, obviously, for the last few months, especially this week, and now it's inevitable.
Yeah, it kind of, the whole thing around it felt like, you know, like everyone at the FEI and everyone in Ireland knew, and the last person we kind of forgot to tell was Stephen Kenny. I mean, Jonathan Hill had this long farewell message, and well, he didn't include the words goodbye in his programme notes, but did thank everyone by staff, every member of staff by name, and then put in
and the gaffer.
And the gaffer at the end, yeah, he got a full paragraph. So that's how it, so that was the whole atmosphere to it. Like, it really felt like a long goodbye. It was, you know, a lot of Irish managers leaving kind of rancor, you know, Mick McCarthy being chased out of the ground in 2002 and chanting Keno. And, you know, there's boos at Staunton and boos at Trapattoni, boos at O'Neill. It was just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of a sympathetic kind of pity there towards Kenny. And in the crowd, there was, you know, the ground was half full. I know they said there was 41,000 tickets sold, but there were, because it was bundled with a Greece game, only 26,000 people turned up. And Kenny had been clinging to, look, I mean, no decision has been made. The board will meet next week. I've sold assurances, but he talked to RT and he maintained that alignment. But by the time he came in to talk to us in the press conference, he did admit that my instinct is that he's going to go. And that set up a press conference that was honestly like a funeral. It was very emotional at times as he looked back at moments of his reign. What were the highlights? What he might do differently? The mistakes and so forth. And did talk about, look, everything from here on is a step down. But he knows at least, and is ready to admit it, that he's going to make that step.
Like, we're chatting here now, and obviously there's a few of our colleagues are writing away. I was in the mix zone for James McLean. You couldn't forget as well. It was obviously his last appearance. One of the questions he was actually asked was, would he actually possibly be coming back? But he was emphatic that he wouldn't. But the fact is, there is going to be a new manager, and no matter what happens, there is. But some people won't see a sadness in it. Some people are going to say, well, do you know what? He's had his go. And he wasn't successful, he wasn't good enough, he wasn't up. That's what you're going to say harshly. But then, as he also said, it is still a very good job to be coming into now, apparently. But that's, I kind of would agree in a sense that, yeah, clearly there's players who are now with more experience, but it's by no means guaranteed that some of these players will, he kind of repeat it again today about they're on an upward trajectory. But some of these fellas are still at a crossroads in their own career, and it's like, it's by no means, it was needed, blood and players and all the rest of it, but it's by no means guaranteed that the next fella is going to come in and reap the rewards, because some of these fellas still have very, very tough days and, I'd say, seasons ahead of them.
Yeah, Andrew Moran came on, and he was the 21st debutant under Stephen Kenny's reign. But, you know, when he does list off some of the most talented players, you know, he mentions the goalkeepers, he mentions the forwards, he mentions the centre-halves, he never mentions the midfielders. And that's not necessarily making a slight towards Knight and Malumbi, but it's just, it's the area of the pitch in which Ireland are so weak. And, you know, you can't really read too much into tonight's game, because such a weird occasion. Ireland took an early lead and then kind of stopped playing after that, conceded their customary long-range goal, but should have lost the game, really, to be quite honest. I mean, Mark Travers made a couple of good saves when he came on, but there was one moment late in the game when Moran was breaking through and Ferguson was in support and Malumbi had the ball, and he just like played the ball through, and Malumbi just kind of lofted this nothing ball. It was way too far ahead of Moran for the counter-attack. I don't know, I just rolled out of play.
You actually turned back to me in the press box at the time, and I'd never heard your course so much in your life. You were fucking, you were off on one. I was like, fucking hell, Gav, calm down.
Well, this is game number 40, you know. I've covered all these games. COVID meant I wasn't at all them, but yeah, it's just that's the issue, like, you know. And it does depress the hell out of you to think, like, fuck, if the last manager hadn't lost Rice and Grealish, we wouldn't be in this mess, you know. We'd be a completely different team. And sorry, I don't mean to trigger you, but like, I know when we'll now talk to, you know, talk when I turn to Stephen Kenny's legacy and so forth, it's hard to imagine that would have happened under Kenny, to be all, in all fairness. Like, he was, as it turns out, was very limited as Ireland manager. like he was given lots of time to succeed. He failed comprehensively and on his own terms. He was given a hard group, but you know they made it look much worse than it needed to be, and particularly in the home and away games against Greece, where they were so poor. Like, he did identify talent. He scoured every corner of Ireland and England and further afield to find people who could play, ideally find wingers to play in his system. But you know, the problem was Johnston and Ogbeni were hardly ever fit at the same time. I think the one game they were fully fit for to play together was away to Gibraltar, the 4-0 win. So that meant he ended up with that back three, and it was just never looked comfortable. And you know, I think in the long empty days to come, I think when he looks back at it, he'll feel, did I get to do the job on my own terms? But then what international manager gets to do it? Like, it's about improvisation rather than ideologues, you know. It's just who's available at that time, who's fit for their clubs. And I think he really struggled with that. He struggled tactically in game. He kind of alluded to that in the embargo section, which we'll read about in the 42 later tomorrow. Okay, so I'm
As soon as you started mentioning the embargo section, I literally couldn't even sense about 10 different heads like straining right across there, because like obviously just me and you are sitting here, I'm looking less than a foot away, I'm looking into your eyes, I can see the pain.
It's pain obviously, but it is kind of like, Jesus, we're in a bad place now. And it's apathy. Like, one thing I noticed tonight was that in the 93rd minute or 92nd minute, the second last minute stoppage time, the big screen put Kenny up, like this long lingering shot, and there's no reaction, and like no one booed, no one cheered, just pure apathy. So like, we don't have a competitive game now for 10 months, Nations League, which is important but no one understands is important, so no one really gets up for it. Then you're looking into a World Cup qualifying campaign in 2025 that'll be very difficult to qualify for, and then like realistically the next tournament we might have a chance of competing at is Euro 2028, and that's partly because we're co-hosts. Like, it's just so far away from when the nation will give a shit about the team again, to be honest. And that's kind of the grim thing, because we'd years of not giving a shit about the team, and Kenny came in and kind of sold a vision of just like, here's to get excited, we'll play different style of play and so forth, and then people really bought into it. And I think maybe people bought into it for so long because they were just so desperate to believe in anything. But ultimately, like, you know, the results at the end of the day don't lie, and the kind of reality is too much.
But that is a really good point you make, even just in terms of maybe a little bit of a sense of apathy. You could tell that even by the fact that the crowd that was there on the back of, maybe it wasn't some sort of celebration, there was nothing really there to be celebrating. And normally, like, you might get to a friendly game in November, say, oh well, who's playing, anything exciting, and yeah, there was little flashes from Mikey Johnston, but no one's coming away from that thinking, oh, there could be something there for the future, even though clearly that's obviously where the future's going to be coming from. But it was interesting that when Stephen Kenny was talking in the press conference afterwards, in the end, like you're saying, he was being asked about, you know, have you got regrets, would you do anything different, what are your highs. It was like, effectively, it was like an exit interview in all but name, and he kind of alluded to that, the Serbia game, and that was a game, you're talking there about fans, that going into the last final quarter where the fans really gave an energy to the team. Ireland got a draw out of that game, and game in Bazuna, probably one of Bazuna's best games in an Ireland jersey, was one of the saves he made. But that, it does feel like, and you made that point there, right, sense that maybe a bit of a togetherness or a link that was there between fans and a manager and a group of players has obviously gone over the last little while in terms of the results, and that's going to be as important as anything from the next person coming in to actually get that back.
Oh, totally. And I think the FAI have to kind of make that appointment partly with that in mind. They obviously have to get the best candidate, but there is a profile of candidate who won't energise the crowd like that. You know, like, I mean, and they're usually top of the betting at this time, you know, Neil Lennon and Steve Bruce and stuff, won't get that energy from the crowd, you know, it just won't work. So we'll have to see. Yeah, and then just when you're looking back, like, I mean, you could convince yourself at the end, when he got his last contract, you thought, like, I actually thought it was absolutely the right decision, and I would have written it at the time, that the trajectory was upwards, you know? Like, I mean, things had gone to shit at the start of the campaign, but then they had beaten Luxembourg, they'd beaten Azerbaijan, they'd drawn it home to Portugal and Serbia. They improved the results against all the teams they'd faced earlier in the campaign. So that's like the definition of improvement. But then, obviously, Anthony Barry left. That will probably be looked back as one of the key moments. And then they went into that Nations League campaign in June and just never got off the starting blocks against Armenia. And just things were just so fitful from there. And then landed in a brutal draw, obviously. they could have done something about it. They finished higher in the Nations League group. I think Kenny will, I'd say, if there's a few freeze frames in his mind, it's one of Troy Parrott running clear on goal in Hampden. If he scores that, it's a 2-2 draw. We're higher in the group. We're at least looking into a playoff in March, even if we landed in this brutal group.
I'm trying to remember that chance, but that was early in the second half. What score? What was this? Was it? Had it was 1-1 at that point, but so true. Like there's so many. That's actually the thing. If you look back in it as well, this is one of the things I kind of rally against or would disagree with in terms of he was totally out of his depth. I don't think that was the case. I just think it was those the small margins, the fine margins, but that make such the biggest difference, and that are going to make an impact the Dutch game at home, a major one in terms of half time, the changes they made and not reacting. But like it does feel in the campaign as well. There's been such big moments that just haven't gone Ireland's way. And not because they didn't earn it, it's just because that's what happens in football. That's just the nature of the game. They think about Portugal being so close to actually winning the game until injury time, essentially. You think of the France game at the start of this campaign where Mike Maignan makes that save from Nathan Collins. You get a draw on that. All of a sudden you're going to Greece, even though it's a bit later, it's after the summer, and it's a totally different maybe sense, whatever. It just feels like those little moments that could have went Ireland's way didn't, and that's not to say that's because they 100% they deserved those moments they got away. That's just what happens in football, and it goes back to that point you make as well about international manager. Like, you're never going to have your strongest team. You're always going to have players out of form, out of favour, not fit and all the rest of it, and it's about being able to adapt and finding a way of getting that result, and that's ultimately what's caused Ireland.
That's exactly it. Like, I mean, if you like, you would absolutely madden yourself by just looking at it game by game. You think, God, there's not much in that against France, and there's not much in that at home to Holland, and there's not that much in that away to Greece. But add them all together, and then you've got a trend. And I do think one of it was, like you mentioned, just not hanging on, just not getting it done. I do wonder if the squad was too young. You know, and like I know people, Kenny a few months ago said that his having all these young players wasn't a vanity project, he had to do it. I kind of agree with him, to be honest. He was probably right. But they were too young, to be honest. I mean, they were the second youngest team across all of the 54 teams in qualifying. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the best performance was at home to France in March, which was the one game that Coleman played. I actually think he was a big loss. It was just like the team's young and they're so kind of loyal to how the manager sets them out. They just don't adapt in games. You know, there's so many instances of like, okay, we're just under the pump here for 10 or 15 minutes. They don't kind of accommodate themselves to the flow of a game. I think that's probably why he brought Duffy back after the game in Athens. But, you know, Duffy then was like really poor against the Dutch at home, was cut too deep on both the goals that decided the game. So, look, I mean, he did refer to something after the game about, you know, he sets the bar really high and that's how you achieve great things, but it also means you're down for a fall. And ultimately, I think he set the bar too high. Like, I mean, we wanted someone to believe in and talk more positively about everything and tell us we can achieve things, because that's what we all needed to hear after those awful years in 2017, 2018, 2018 and 2019. But he couldn't match it, you know. And I think, look, I think part of, I don't think you can divorce what's all happened from like how he talked to get the job and all his promises and his optimism, because he always felt like he was never fully confident in the job. He was always on the back foot. Yeah, he talked even in there.
The moments, the pressure. And it's true as well, I suppose, because even going back to the summer of 2021, when obviously coming out of COVID, when people from the FAI could actually go and spend more time around the team hotel and get a sense of what was going on. Because you go back to that Andorra game, when obviously Andorra went ahead. Seamus Coleman turned up to that camp when he was injured, which was seen as a very big thing for Kenny, in the sense that was the captain obviously showing a bit of support, but also those people within the FAI who were obviously at that point thinking, Jesus, I don't know if this fella is actually gonna, where he's the one who will stick with. And then they saw what was happening around the place, he saw the move that was around the place, and that did swing it in his favour, then tallied with what happened at the end of that, where results did pick up for Ireland as well. That ultimately is why Jonathan Hill was the one who handed, as a CEO, made his recommendation to the board at the FAI, got his new contract, but was telling that in his programme notes that he was kind of holding his hands up a little bit and saying, well, the next decision isn't going to be mine, it's going to be people elsewhere, and that's going to be Mark Canham, he's going to be the one. And I was writing it today, and we are chatting about this, like, it's not going to be quite a similar extensive procedure as what happened with Vera Pau, and it is going to just be Canham now making his recommendations, and it might not even be next Tuesday. It could very well be something that the board get together a bit quicker if it's virtually or whatever, and make that decision. And I think now, like, it does just need to do it. Everyone knows, like, he was speaking in there, he knows what the story is. They just need to make the decision and get it done. Like, I'm off to that tomorrow and Thursday, so ideally they do it on Friday. About even saying that, you know what, I feel bad because we're talking about a man's fucking job at the end of the day as well. But, like, it's just like even what we were saying there, he came in, did have that level of positivity about the job and what he was going to try and do and how he was going to do it, and made huge kind of changes to the squad. Ultimately, it hasn't worked, and I suppose it is now just going to be up to the next person to actually build on it. It's the only thing we can look to now, isn't it? And it has to happen soon in terms of appointment, because the worst thing, I think, is to actually just let this drag. Really can't, in terms of making the decision and then not having someone lined up. They just have to be able to say, Bill, this is what's happening next, because this isn't, it's not as if they're going to be going to bed tonight thinking, oh, we have to look for a new manager. This has been on the cards for a while.
Yeah, but at the same time, this new FAI are not defined by how quickly they make decisions, and there's no real need to make a massive quick decision here, because our next game of consequence is September. There's friendly games in March. One we're told would be kind of a middling to high ranking nation, and then another probably a low ranking nation, and then another couple in June, probably against teams that are going to the Euros, who will use this as fodder before going there, which is kind of grim. And then we roll in. And then September is when they need to make a decision. So, yeah, it's all over. I mean, when we look back at the Wikipedia results in 20 years' time, we'll ask ourselves, how the hell did we live through that and how did we find it? From a work and kind of chat point of view, wasn't that bad. That was pretty interesting.
You'll always have Lule. Regular listeners will get that joke. And those of you who do get that joke, you deserve it. This podcast is finished. I'm Davis Ned, and that's Gavin Cooney.
Thanks very much.
Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady!
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.